NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
Hun Lynch is a polymathic creative force whose practice spans music, theatre, film and writing. Through the lens of her Samoan, Fijian, Pākehā ancestry and lineage, her sound is expansive and deeply personal, with tracks that fluctuate between moments of spiritual grandeur and existential fragility. She wades reflective and introspective tides in her highly anticipated debut album, Sycophant, released via Noah Records, distilling her expansive creative vocabulary into a sound that is as theatrical and poetic as it is intimate. Hun sat down with Half Queen for this week's Long Player to wax lyrical about her latest sonic offering and the theatre of spiritual sycophancy.
Kia ora, I'm Hun Lynch and you're listening to my debut album Sycophant on 95BFM Long Player. I really wanted there to be like a platform or like a ladder or something into the album, so you kind of get wound into it and then you get like wound out at the other end, kind of like a prayer or something. What do you even think is clean? I wasn't making with the mind of releasing music or making an album or anything, I was just making for fun. When I started playing a bunch and I met Navar and he was like, you need to release music, like, come on, let's do it. And he was kind of like, just send me stuff. And it just happened to be in the stuff that I sent. All of my friends are trying to... I think at the time I was listening to lots of Michael Jackson vocal stacks and just being like, what the hell? Like, kind of looking back at the work that I've like ingested over my life and kind of taking it apart. And so I was just trying to do all these big vocal stacks, and then the language that was coming out was puritanical, moral, panic, conundrum, certainly in the current moment in the world. And I experienced this a lot, and I think this is like a symptom of a really religious upbringing and also kind of like a predisposition towards compulsive thoughts and stuff like this. You know, there's this quite intense language in the song as well, but I think what I mean by those things is kind of like, this is everyone, all of my friends, everybody I know. It's not just me. We're all experiencing this kind of great grand confusion about what is the right way to be? What is the right way to do it? Is there a possible through line? And I guess in my language, the broken English, being good, which is not great framework, but that's what I was working with at the time. And then, yeah, just the question, like, what is the way? And this is kind of the big overarching question, I think, probably of the album and low-key of my life, you know. So I haven't solved it, but yeah, that's kind of what that first one is. Partner Rose, she's making contemporary, she's a contemporary dancer, and she was like, I want you to score it. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. And she was like, just do it, I think you can do it. So I like made her the most chaotic, unbelievable score on GarageBand that went up at the Unitech show. And this track was one of them, kind of, the draft of it. I was having a big Ennio Morricone moment, so it's like a lot of kind of Western guitar delay stuff. I just kept going with it. I'm in talks like to be able to see things get much bigger than they're supposed to be. Broken forecasts to the city. Things get much bigger than they're supposed to be. There was this beautiful Samoan dancer called Putty, and he had this beautiful solo. It was so amazing. He's a gorgeous dancer, and was so moved by him, I made this thing, and then I just held on to it. It's funny that you say the commanding stuff, because it's like that lyrical content came out through watching somebody else rather than through my own lens of being able to say that on my own terms. But then I'm gifted, now I get to say that on stage, and it like has become mine to say, get out of my way. Broken bow like intimacy. think most of the lyrics come from his movement, except the verses, which I kind of put in really recently about this broken bow, this idea of your shadow being really big. It's like a natural phenomenon when the sun is behind you, often in like a natural space and the clouds are in like a desert or something. It's a David Foster Wallace reference to this thing that happens in Infinite Jest, which felt like aligned with the work that Rose had made and this guy Putty and these big natural spaces and something being much bigger than it actually is, but you can't tell if it is really that big or if you're being tricked or am I giant, you know, like, am I huge, am I tiny? Okay, Post-Truth Allegory is a work that my partner Rose Philpott is making, a contemporary dance work, so I've stolen the title and released it first. She said it was fine. I'll be quite frank, I don't really understand it either because Rose is so much smarter than me, which is so brilliant and gorgeous. My understanding is, yeah, it's like operating in this system where truth is no longer tangible, meaning like you can't access, we don't know what is true and what isn't true, and it no longer has any value. Truth no longer holds capital in the systems that we're inside of. And so what then? What is the capital? Where is the value? Yeah, I guess it's sort of, again, a bit of a moral conundrum and a feeling of looking out at the world and being so kind of confused and concerned, and then looking down at your own hands and kind of being like, what am I holding? Like, what weapon am I wielding in the world? Because I'm enacting change through my actions, even if I'm not acknowledging it. So what does that look like? And I should make a decision about that. Like, what is it that I want to wave up and down in front of people? There's no answer in the song about what that is. I didn't really come to anything. Originally, the song had way a lot more lyrical content in it, but it didn't make it to the album. That makes it make more sense, but I took it out. I don't know why. To be honest, it started as I would have you back, and that was kind of actually like an appealing to a god, I think, which I flip a lot in this album. It's kind of like going, ah, no, god, bad, harmful, you did so much damage, and then kind of going, please, please help me, please, oh my god. So this is one of those moments where it's like, I'll have you, if you just show me even the briefest moment of care, I will turn back around and like forget everything I said, and I'm ready to like serve anything that's going to promise me that I can believe will help. And that is sort of a dangerous position to be in, because you can be led anywhere, but also I don't know how to not be in that state when you're looking around and seeing so much trouble. Okay, this one's Sycophant. I wrote this ages ago, like, I think it's probably the oldest one. I think I wrote it in 2019. This is a word that my mom has like an incredible vocabulary. She's really well read. And this is a word that I would hear her say and I never really heard anywhere else. And it always stuck in my head. I love the consonants and the kind of like, it's like a word that you spit. Then yeah, it's kind of like somebody who's like an ass kisser or like a flatterer in order to curry favor with somebody more powerful, which feels appropriate in my experience of the world. And also was kind of like a bit of a read on myself, like, which some of the album is, to be honest, like the most critical take of, in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, like what are the worst bits of myself that I'm like trying to exercise. And I think there's definitely some of this behavior across my life. And also a lot of the album is kind of about my early experience in organized religion. So it's kind of a random thing in the sense that nobody knows what it means, but in a way, I don't know, that's kind of interesting to me. That's cool what you say about the production, like it does feel kind of accumulative, and I think obviously that's what happens when you use so much delay, which is across the whole album. Like it feels like it kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it gets so unstable that it collapses, and then I just do that, oh, that's just the whole thing. It did start as a poem, actually. Like, I was reading lots of Kerouac at the time, and I was wondering if the things that people write in their books are, like, real or not. I was going, do I have to receive a true message from God to say that I have, or could I just say it? Could I just take the feeling and write the feeling instead of, like, looking for some psychedelic experience that's gonna qualify me? So it's kind of about the experience of imagining that God had come down walking past everybody else to me, to talk to me, but he didn't, that never happened. And going like, does that count? Does that count for anything? And it's weird because it does count for something. And I often feel like these people that we look at, musicians and writers talking about their life, I'm like, this could be true, or it could be emotional storytelling. It could be what they want us. And there's absolutely no issue with that. I don't need to get bogged down in the details. Like, if it feels like this, that might be so. This was an exploration of that. Like, so what? I didn't do DMT and have this, but it felt like this happened. So let me just say that it did and see what that feels like. Bright air, I guess it's like the experience of something happening and then time slowing down and the molecules and the air becoming so sharp, and like how you perceive the world when adrenaline is running through your body. It's really a situation where something kind of scary happened, but then it was completely fine. But what happened was I was so emotionally impacted from this experience that I had, even though the outcome was totally cool, that I had nowhere to put the feelings, and I was kind of tormented by the fact that I had nothing to do with all of the emotion, I guess, and a weird thing kind of happened where then I kind of put it into the song. I just tried it. I just was like, I'm just going to put it here, and I just kind of somehow like coded it into the music, and then it was gone. Our body falls in the bright
air. Our body falls and I'm right there. Scrambling down a mountain, sliding, sliding like snowman mountain, crying like a big soul, losing everything in a rush. Tiny footprints, golden sneakers, purple, that's how small this place is. Imagine letting a child tangle, golden footprint, she is flying. Four girls in a circle, ageless, 100 ancestors behind us. Pick up quick game is a fast one. Let me live long to prove it to you. Sitting in a woman's office, weakly try to suss this shit out. Scrambling down a mountain, sliding. Better than watching your body fall in the bright air.
Kind of an amazing alchemy that I've realized can happen, that I feel very grateful to have access to think about these pieces as like tangible objects that carry all kinds of things, like this really robust. You can like put lots of stuff in there and they can hold them for you like family members or like friends. And then this thing is in your life, but it's not trapped inside of you clawing to get out.
Promise I won't make an unsafe attachment. Stop over on Christmas and give you a gift. Go back in the company, go back in the costume. At least we're alive, at least is a list. Promise I won't make an unsafe attachment. Stop over on Christmas and give you a gift. Go back in the company, go back in the costume. At least we're alive, at least is a list. Right in.
I feel like every artist has an I Want You song, like Marvin Gaye and Badu, and I was like, I want one, I'm gonna write one. And then it didn't come off the way that it came off to them. I think like it was supposed to be like a kind of sexy romantic song, and it has elements of that, but it is much more about like the confusion of like wanting everything and everyone and the weirdness of kind of believing that you deserve access to everything. It's kind of probably the most, like, what would I call it? My life or something, like me as a person in the world or something. Like it does feel like about being a person in a city and everyone kind of being on top of each other and being in love with everybody, and the claustrophobia of being driven by desire and driven by power and wanting to associate with things because you think that that might make you something.
I want you.
there's this bit I can't get out of this net. We're all caught in like this giant net, but I was also kind of thinking about, I had some compulsive thoughts around like the Higgs. What it is, the net, you know, that they come up with, it's like a net, and they talk about this in physics and like mass, this idea that I'm like my physical matter is like trapped in this earth at the same time as my like my relationships are like all compounding, and just this feeling of overwhelm, of being on fire, of the fire of being alive and also kind of being completely burned up by that at the same time. I wrote this for my eldest niece when she was like one, or she was little. Her name is Lucy, and at the time I was calling her Loloma Lolo, but I don't really call her that anymore because she likes being called Luce because she's six now and she's a legend. Yeah, I just wrote this for her because I love her so much. She kind of changed my perspective, ability to love in this world. It just grew so exponentially. I was totally shocked by the feeling. This has made me enjoy life so much more, and I feel like such a better person because I'm aware of how much my capacity to love. It's also really cool when like the next generation comes into the family and a lot of the old trash kind of gets pushed to the side, because like we're now doing this thing for these beautiful kids, and it heals, or it felt like it did, some things in the family. There's like something to put your energy into instead of just like kind of figuring or whatever. I never play this live. I don't know why I like to. I don't even know how I would play it live, but I kind of just wrote it, and then I nearly didn't put it on, but everybody being Navakator and my girlfriend was like, put that one on. You should put that one on. And I was like, I guess it's nice to put that there, and it's there for her. It's like my ultimate statement to her that's like, I love you down. Like, I love you so much, and I never want there to be any question about the fact that I would do anything for you. My sister has subsequently had two other kids who don't have a song, so I'll have to get on to that. The song Nana, it was just, yeah, basically written for my Nana as she was dying. But as you say, it's also, I don't know, there's something really, really direct about it, which I think is also in alignment with her and who she was. She was a very staunch Catholic woman, and no nonsense, you know, not a lot of feelings. Well, probably a lot of feelings, not a lot of communication of feelings, shall I say. But she was like the most wonderful grandparent, and she played the violin as a child, and she kind of was just so supportive of me. She would listen to me play the awful, awful violin for hours, and then when I became a teenager and I started like playing the guitar in my room, she'd be like, can you play me a song? And I'd be like, no, I'm not playing your song. Then as she was kind of like sick and starting to become clear, play that she wouldn't be here for much longer, I started to be like, look at all the things that you've done, and go like, oh my God, I've spent all this time like shutting her out, la la la. And me and Rose were sitting on the vinyl room one day, and I just, yeah, the song, it kind of came out like this as it was. And but by that time she actually was already deaf, so I went to my mom's house where she was staying, and I was like, oh, can I play you this song? And she was kind of like, oh, I guess so. And then I played her the song, and she kind of was like, two thumbs up vibes. I don't think she could hear it at all. But my aunties and uncles are all like, tears on their face. So I got what I wanted, which was to be the star of the show. And
the hours she spent praying for me. My nana should be stirred down.
This realization that like I've probably been coasting through my life on the prayers of all of these people, particularly my nana and my mom, who like every morning and every night do this kind of ritual thing with this person that I don't have a relationship with, you know, and pray for me and for my best interests, and I just get to be out here a contrarian and like doing my own thing and kind of being like, oh my God, that's gonna end. Like, this person's been praying for me every day since I was born, and even if I don't necessarily believe in the thing that she's talking about, it has to count for something.
My nana should be on a sizable wage. The hours she spent praying for me. My nana should be stirred down center stage. Shouldn't pull the hair, it only just grew, and now I'm back to balding. I'll try to let her brush it, I can take the shame, the hours she spent praying.
And all of that beautiful energy is, I don't know, I just didn't know what to do with that sudden understanding. And it, you know, you can't pay that kind of thing back. So I guess that's what the song's about. It's like, I wish I could do something to offer you the same amount that you've offered me, but I just, it would take me so many lifetimes. The song Conan, this one is named after my best friend, Conan. One of my best friends, one of my many best friends. I just love him so much. I wrote this at a time we were living together, and life is just tricky and tough and hard, and there were lots of tricky things going on in both of our lives, and I did the thing that I always do, which is like, I have a really big feeling, I'm gonna go in the room and like make some music. I made this, and it was, yeah, just basically desiring that him and me and everybody that we know and everybody we don't know can one day just the dream for each other to be relieved of all of the kind of the turmoil, the earthly turmoil, and sort of going, wishing that so much for him, and going, because I wish that so much for him, I know that he wishes that for me, and I know that that's for all of us, because I can so tangibly feel what I want for this person that I love, which is to like be relaxed and have peace and be able to kind of expand up as huge, shoot up into the sky and like shoot light out of your pores, like as big as you possibly, your spirit is.
Spirit, stranger.
Yeah, it's kind of just, I don't know why, it just, I called it Conan on like the file because that's who I was thinking about. And then it just kind of stuck and I asked him, maybe I should have called it something else, but I was like, oh, can I call it Conan? Like, oh, sorry, if he's your name. And he was like, yeah, sounds good. Like, I think he loves it. I think he feels happy. Maybe it's nice to have a song written about you, but I also feel like I'm kind of using his clout. I don't know. what clout? No, joke. Sorry, Conan. Joking. But yeah, it's a nice song because he now lives in Dunedin and I miss him so much every single day. And so it's kind of nice through this weird medium of me writing him like a love song, even though we kind of, there was a moment where we were like, are we in love? And it's like, no, we're gay, we're just sisters. And so it's kind of like a weird warped love song, you know? Yeah, it's the image kind of actually came from Angels in America, the play. There's like this image in that play that I've never been able to forget, which is like bodies rising up from the earth and they're grabbing each other's ankles and wrists and they become this great net that then turns into three-atomed oxygen molecules and they become ozone layer. And the ozone layer gets repaired and protects everybody on the earth. And so my Nana had passed at this time. It's kind of like they had had another friend from childhood pass, kind of like this idea of also being protected by the people that have left us. And maybe they're offering us a bit of comfort. Spirit cream, relaxing. Yes, I think of you. I guess I wanted something to kind of, as I said at the top, like wind you out of the experience or like give you a step to go back to your life or something. And I just made this. I really nearly didn't put it on. It's kind of maybe if I consider the album as like a thing that's like being boiled, like the reduction is this is what you're left with, which is just like, I think about you.
I think of you the way home. I think of you.
And interesting that you said earlier that it kind of is all a lot of chaos and then it gets like a devotional section and then I think this like stripping away all of the confusion and the identity and the personhood and the selfhood and the ideas and the concepts and then you just kind of are left with hope, yeah, left with love and contemplating and pondering the love of the people that you think about and that are in your life. It kind of just says the same thing over and over again. I just think about you. I just think about you on the way home, and I'm thinking about you. And it was kind of supposed to be a soft way to land, although it is kind of quite grand right at the end. And it's got some sounds in it, like from the house that we live in, where I made it, and lots of like nice little sampling of things from real life, maybe to kind of like patch it all up together. It feels good. It does feel like I feel released, in fact, like I can stop worrying about it. I do think the patience is a funny thing because it did take me so long, and something about that is also kind of like cool as well because I didn't rush it. And so then I feel kind of proud. I feel like I waited for the time in which it felt right to me instead of just like forcing it out, which I sometimes do with things. So I'm kind of like, thank God it's done. Thank you, everybody that I know and love. Thank you for supporting me, because yeah, I did it by myself, but of course it requires like so much love and care from other people, so I couldn't have done it without yous. You can buy my album at Noah Records website or Bandcamp.
That was Longplayer. Thanks NZ On Air Music.